uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to another marvelous day here on the radio support group of, by, and for we, the people of the United States of America. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live coast to coast, border to border, streaming around the planet. What will be the impact of banning our young from dissent, debate, and even listening to the other side in America? A question that I'd like to raise in the first hour of the program, along with several others. We're going to get into the latest developments with Terry Schiff. Some interesting stuff about the funding of the right-wing hoop-de-doop on all of this, and why it's being turned into a political event, shall we say. In our second hour, Bob Ferguson, the president of the Center for Science and Public Policy, will be on. A group division of the Frontiers of Freedom, funded by Exxon. He's going to tell us why mercury is not a problem. Should be interesting. By the way, our toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. Our chat room seems to be down at the moment. If you're listening, you're trying to get into the chat room. I can't get into the chat room. I'm not sure if it's just, you know, a problem with this part of the country. Sometimes different parts of the country, the internet goes flaky. Or if the server that's providing the chat room is having a hiccup. So we'll try, you know, periodically during the breaks. And if it comes back up again, I'll let you know. Fortunately, this happens very rarely. But, of course, Mercury went retrograde on Sunday. So this week, next week, and the week after are the, if Murphy was right, he's definitely going to be right during these 3 weeks. According to my astrology knowledgeable friends. I confess to not being one of them. I have no clue about astrology, except for that one thing, Mercury retrograde. Look out for that. And I learned that from one of my publishers, actually, doesn't answer the phone. He screens all his calls when Mercury's retrograde. A University of Arizona student, this an article in the Arizona Daily Wildcat by Cassie Tomlin. A university, which I'm not sure, I think maybe the university newspaper, a University of Arizona student was banned from attending President Bush's Social Security Forum at the Tucson Convention Center yesterday. This would have been the day before yesterday now. This was on Monday. I have to tell you this story. When my kids were young, and we were living down in Atlanta. We were living in Newt Gingrich's district. And by young, our oldest was a teenager, and our youngest was, I don't know, 7, 8, 9 years old. So this was 15 years ago or so, when Pat Buchanan was running for president, whatever year that was. And he was coming to town. And Cobb County, the county that we lived in, it was probably one of the most conservative, white-bread counties in Cobb County and Gwinnett County, the two main ones in all of metropolitan Atlanta. And, you know, I mean, you had to be for Newt to be my congressman. That's what it took. So it was fertile territory for somebody like Pat Buchanan to come to town. And he was going to speak at the Cobb County Civic Center. And it was open to, you know, first come, first serve. And so we said to our kids, we sat our kids down. Now, at this point, our children had lived in Germany for a year. In fact, this was just a year or two after we got back from Germany. This must have been in the mid to late 80s, because we lived in Germany 86 and 87. And we sat our kids down and said, you know, Adolf Hitler's rise to power in Germany was not without the consent of the people. I mean, you could argue that he exploited the terrorist attack on the Reichstag, the parliament building, the Reichstaggebäude, by Marius van der Lubbe, and used that to leapfrog from a minority position into being chancellor, and then banned the Communist Party and the left-leaning parties, the socialist parties. And then, of course, had a majority in the parliament and took over the government, and then held an election, and gee whiz, guess who got elected? But nonetheless, within a year or two, by 33, late 33, early 34, and even by late 34, and I'd say even perhaps even into 35 and 36, he was widely loved by probably the majority of the German people, even as he was spewing racist, hateful rhetoric. And so, you know, we and our kids were familiar with this. When we lived in Germany, interestingly, we knew some elderly people. We lived in a little town in the middle of nowhere, way up in a little corner of nowhere. And there were some folks in that town who were our neighbors in their 70s and 80s who, at that time, in the 1980s, believed that the only thing that Hitler did wrong was he invaded Russia a year too early. And they were still, you know, and there, you know, there was no Holocaust and all this kind of stuff. I mean, there is a substantial contingent of that perspective in Germany. And then, of course, the majority of our kids' friends and their teachers, they learned about the Holocaust. They learned about the era of Hitler in their schools and from their friends. And it was pretty common knowledge. But they had heard the whole thing. I mean, you can't live in Germany without hearing it. And our kids were all in the German public schools, and they all spoke German. I mean, it was the only way they could survive. So anyhow, they had this kind of historical background. So we said, here's an opportunity to see what may be a similar phenomena here in the United States. Because here Pat Buchanan is coming around, and he's using a lot of nationalistic rhetoric. And so we're going to take you to hear him speak, just like a lot of people took their kids to hear Hitler speak in the 30s and 40s, or in 33, 32, 33, 34, sort of like, hey, you know the enemy? Check out what's going on. And we went down to the Cobb County Civic Center, and Pat Buchanan came out, and he gave his speech. And a good chunk of it was devoted to those people, those international bankers, and those people in Europe and the United States who had an anti-American agenda that involved globalization. And it was quite obvious that he was speaking of Jews. I mean, he never said it, but anybody who's familiar with the language of anti-Semitism, it was quite easy to pick up. And in fact, it was a good chunk in my recollection of his speech was this kind of nationalistic, pointing the finger, railing, and then the internationalists, and then the UN, and, you know, all the normal stuff, all the demagogic stuff that constituted about 30% of Pat Buchanan's campaign. Now, that said, I have to say, there are some things that Pat Buchanan said then and says to this day with which I agree. Our trade policies are nuts, for example. Although he wraps them in the mantle of well, we need not get into that. And of course, there's a lot of things. He was a Republican, a lot of things with which I just flat out disagree. But nonetheless, they let us in. Nobody at the door said, what's your political affiliation? Nobody said, you know, are you a supporter of Mr. Buchanan's or not? Are you a Democrat or a Republican? What is your political persuasion? They let us in. And for that, I tip my hat to Pat Buchanan and his goon squad. And they had a bunch of skinheads and guys in, like, biker outfits. This place was swarming with them. In fact, it's funny. One guy was holding a sign up. The auditorium was packed. It had a capacity of, like, 3,000, and there was, like, 3,500 people there. I mean, they had to close the doors. The fire marshal came and said, you've got too many people in here, and they closed the doors, and they wouldn't let anybody else in. So they had to put speakers outside. This is how right-wing Cobb County is. And it was getting hot in there. And there was a guy who was holding a sign up that said, the liberals are really sweating now. And I remember our youngest daughter, who was then 7 or 8, this very innocently turned to Louise, and she says, I'm really sweating. But anyhow, so George Bush comes to the University of Arizona, or the home of the, you know, he comes to Arizona to give his talk about Social Security. And Stephen Gerner and he's a political science and pre-pharmacy sophomore at the University of Arizona, and three other young Democrats waiting in line, 40 minutes. They had tickets on which their names were printed, which they had acquired from the office of Congressman Raul Grijalva, the Democrat of Arizona, So they had tickets to attend this thing. And Gurner, this one, that one of these four guys, of the three guys, three of them were dressed like just absolutely normal people, students. And Gurner was wearing a T-shirt, a University of Arizona Young Democrats T-shirt. And it said, "Don't be a smart," and then there was an image of the donkey, the Democratic Party symbol. And then underneath that it said, "University of Arizona Young Democrats." Gurner said, now reading from this article by Cassie Tomlin, Gurner said the staffer, this one of Bush's people, who refused to provide his name, asked for Gurner's ticket and crumpled it up. The staffer walked away, returned in 20 minutes, and told Gurner his name had been added to a list banning him from entering the convention center for the speech. Gurner says, "I really wanted to hear a chance to hear the Bush side of the Social Security debate. Unfortunately, I now won't hear all the facts first person." Now, that's part of the outrageous stuff. I mean, this is Bush was doing this all through the campaign. He was showing up and he was saying, if you don't sign the loyalty oath, if you're not, you know, with a, you know, blah, 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 you can't come in. The Republicans were doing that. I mean, they'd raised this to an art form. And the press sort of went along with it, and the Democrats sort of went along with it by saying, okay, this is political campaigning, and he's stage managing his appearances. And even though Air Force One is flying him there and there's hundreds of millions of dollars of tax money involved in Bush's campaign, nonetheless, technically it's being paid for by the Republican Party. Well, this was an event that was paid for with your and my tax dollars, many of those being our Social Security tax dollars. Terry Kenney, president of the Young Democrats of Arizona, says if this had been paid for by the Bush-Cheney campaign and they discriminated entrance, it would have been unethical, undemocratic, and wrong, but they would have had the right to do it. The distinction was that this was paid for with taxpayers' dollars. Some of the money even comes out of Social Security. When Bush spoke on February 3rd in North Dakota, the Washington Post noted that more than 40 people were banned from that speech. So now we have our Führer. I don't think I've ever called him that, but this is the kind of behavior you expect in a totalitarian state, where you have a public event paid for with public money, where public servants, employees of we the people, walk up to people and say, "Because you're in the wrong political party, you can't come in." What is wrong with this picture? What has happened to democracy in America? Has Bush World gone that far into 1984? It sure looks like it. Aren't you outraged? Contact your member of Congress. The number for Congress, toll-free, 1-877-SOB-USOB. No, seriously, that's the phone number for Congress. Give them a call 20 minutes after the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Smiling faces sometimes pretend to be your friend.
Yeah, like Bush
smiling
and Cheney.
Faces show no traces of the evil that lurks within.
And welcome back. 24 and a half minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And wait till I tell you what Ken Blackwell is up to down in Ohio now. He's finally, he was subpoenaed to testify before Congress and didn't show up about the little problems they were having in Ohio that caused George Bush, by a margin of some 60 to 80,000 votes, to win that state and thus win the presidency. And finally, he has shown up. We'll get to that in just a minute. 1-866. By the way, our chat room is up and running. If you want to drop in, to go to TomHartman.com, click live chat. It'll take you to our forums. Click live chat again, and boom, you will be in. You may have to hold down the control key if you have pop-up suppression when you click the register button, just because it pops up a window to fill out the register information. But that's it. And we don't sell our email lists or any of that junk. I mean, it's all your privacy is assured. 25 minutes past the hour. the place here where being progressive never felt so good. Right, Armin? How you doing? Armin in Sarasota, Florida, on the line with us.
Hey, Tom. How you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Armin?
I'm sorry. I missed that debate yesterday, apparently, about that Terry Schiavo. And I just want to bring up one point.
Which debate was that?
Well, I think your board op said you all were discussing it yesterday.
Oh, you mean just the general discussion of it? Yeah, it's hard to avoid it.
I understand, but my wife and I have discussed this, and the thing that we seem to see, in all fairness to that young lady, is we don't see the media mentioning about the one nurse making the statement that he said, quote, you know, her husband did the B word. I won't use it. Did the B die yet or pass on? That's one point. And then the other, is that true? Did he really say that?
I don't know what you're talking about, Armin. I mean, try it if you're trying to avoid obscenity. Try it in just plain English. I mean, without the obscenity, because I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, the husband supposedly said, did the bee, you know, like some people say, son of a, you know what, did the bee pass on yet, talking about his wife.
Oh.
And a nurse overheard that.
Oh, yeah.
And I haven't heard it in the mainstream media at that point. And, like his real care for her, you know, that would be apparently
this
what
is,
he really cared
well,
about.
Well, his
her.
Real care for her. I mean, he spent 4 years with her after she was first brain dead, shuttling her back and forth to California to different clinics, trying to find out if there was any cure, bringing in other physicians. He lived with her parents for several years, for the first 3 years.
But can I say one other thing?
Yeah.
What is it true? Is it true or not true that he has the money and
the trust fund has
withheld therapy for her?
The trust fund is now down to $50,000. That's
has
all.
Has he or has he not withheld therapy for her? And is it true that the physicians on record that were handling her of late said that without therapy, they don't really feel that it's fair to let her go because they feel that therapy she's been reacting in these.
None of that's true. Apparently you've been watching Fox News.
I haven't. Now, please.
If you look at the CAT scans from 1999, there is no brain there. Much of her brain has been replaced by spinal fluid. It was so damaged. The tissue was so damaged it has dissolved away. The top part of the brain that involves thinking, it's gone. There's a huge empty cavity filled with spinal fluid up there. So this is not anything that's going to be resolved with therapy, Armin. You have a functioning brain stem. That's it. And occasionally you have people like this who are in vegetative states where their brain stem causes them to grimace and to blink. And that's all she's doing.
So then the statements that we're hearing aren't really out into the media very much. That's the thing that makes us suspect is the point of him saying, I'm going to go ahead and say it.
I'm not going to let you say go ahead and say it. Because I got the point. And number one, whether he said it or not doesn't matter to me. Number two, I don't believe he would have said it. Number three, there's so much money and so much money coming from the right wing. We'll get into this later in the program. It's 29 minutes past the hour.
A party at Ed's house. Okay. Will Ed's parents be there?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friend. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix. The Tom Hartman radio program. Right here, right now. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. If you'd like to be on the program, weigh in on the issues of the day. Jeff in Atlanta on the phone. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. I listened to Neil Bortz yesterday for an hour, and Neil Bortz on this subject actually has a brain. And what was so telling is he had four callers against his opinion, in my opinion, your opinion, and every one of them either said something totally intellectually incongruent or based on misinformation. So that says everything right there. But my bigger point is, I can't understand how we're not focusing on the hypocrisy. I called Tony Snow this morning. I tried to make that point. I said, the Futility to Life Act in Texas. And he goes, baby was allowed to die because they pulled the plug. And he goes, well, I don't know anything about that. I'd be shocked if that was true.
Like, it happened last Thursday.
Right. And I don't understand how we're not people like us and the rest of, you know, liberal talk people.
Who's the Tony Snow that you told this to? Is he a talk show host or is he?
Yeah, some other talk show on Sirius. And the point is, I mean, between what they did with Terri Schiavo and the fact that Bush said the words, it's always wise to err on the side of human life. It's like, okay, now why don't we just show a documentary of all the times he's been unwise, especially as Texas governor executing all those people.
Laughing about killing, what's her name?
Carla.
Yeah, Carla Faye Tucker. Laughing about it and mocking her after he executed her, she who had converted to Christianity and begged.
Right, it's absurd.
I mean, it's beyond absurd. It's hypocritical.
Right, like last night on The Daily Show, you know, there's countless examples of things like this. But when they were talking about all the fake news this administration has put out, and they showed footage of Bush being put on the spot about it by the press, and, you know, he just gave some stupid answer that avoided the question pretty much. But it looked really awkward because it showed you, okay, this president really can't account for what he's been doing. Bigger question is this. What if all of the crazy Republicans were to become aware of the stuff, the Futility to Life Act and all this other stuff we're talking about? What if finally all of them came on our side and said, wow, this president has no conscience?
It's starting to happen. You're starting to see Republicans say enough of this. It started with Jim Jeffords. Jim Jeffords had been a Republican his whole entire life. He had worked for Barry Goldwater's campaign. He had worked on Eisenhower's campaign. He ran for office as a Republican from Vermont back when Vermont was largely a Republican state in the 60s and 70s. He's been our United States Senator for I don't know how many years. And finally, in 2001, he said, that's enough. And it was George W. Bush that pushed him over the edge. He said, that's it. This guy has, and it was the education bill. This guy has gone over the top. I can't be a Republican anymore. And he left the Republican Party. And last night, here in Vermont, on Vermont Public Radio, we called his office this morning, tried to get him on, but we couldn't get through to him. Last night on Vermont Public Radio, Jim Jeffords, United States Senator Jim Jeffords, a lifelong Republican up until just very recently, said that in his opinion, the reason that George W. Bush invaded Iraq was twofold. Number one, oil for his oil buddies, and number two, to get himself reelected because war presidents get reelected.
Well, that's encouraging to hear, but I still have to say, what's the mechanism where, you know, if we were to impeach him, you have to impeach the whole administration.
Well, we have to go way beyond that. Some little small thing like impeachment. What we have to do is expose the big lie machine.
No, but I agree with you. But my point is this. There's no mechanism to say, okay, now who's going to be the actual president in charge? We wouldn't have a leader.
Have a mechanism. It's called the vote. I mean, and you've got a big vote coming up in just 19, 20 months from now. There's a huge vote coming up in 2006. If Democrats can take back the House and Senate, then they can begin investigating the more than 50 major felonies that have been committed by George W. Bush and senior members of his administration. And they could bring this thing down just like Nixon came down around Watergate. Time will tell. But the point is that then you're looking at the election of 2008. But if the Democrats take control of the House or the Senate in 2006, they can stop a lot of the damage that's being done. They can even reverse much of it. People think the president has all this power. He has the power of the bully pulpit. The real power is in the House of Representatives. And that's, you know, we need to be focusing on the House of Representatives and the Senate and getting these people elected in 2006.
I think your optimism is a little bit naive. No offense.
Well, it's based on history. The Republicans were facing the exact same problem back after Barry Goldwater went down in flames in 64, and they were standing on the outside looking in going, what do we do? They took back the House with Newt Gingrich, and that was the beginning of it. And the Democrats, again, when Nixon had power, and the Democrats were saying, you know, are we ever, you know, because LBJ with the Vietnam War, he had so disgraced the Democrats, and the Democrats were like, you know, what will we do? Will we ever have a national election? And they took control of the Senate, and Sam Irving started holding hearings on this third-rate burglary that happened just before the election in 72, and this was right after the election. Nixon won by a landslide. And within 6-8 months, a year of the time that he won that election, boom, he's out on his butt. And Jerry Ford came in. So there is no doubt in my mind that if we can take the House or the Senate, and ideally both, in 2006, that that things can be turned around in this country very quickly, and that the presidency can be taken back in 2008. But it's going to take people not saying, not throwing their hands up and saying, you're being an optimist, I'm not going to do anything. We have to get active.
Can I give you a quick stanza from a poem I wrote called If Jesus Was Alive Today? It's four lines, real funny and politically relevant, I promise.
Sure.
If Jesus was alive today, boy, would Congress get a smack for practically everything they've done, especially for trusting Junior with Iraq.
There you go. Okay. Well said. Jeff, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Bridget in Virginia on the line. Hey, Bridget.
Hi, how are you? I would like to make a comment about Terry, but when you were talking about the next re-election, I think it is going to be very difficult because the Republicans have found a surefire formula, and that is every 3 weeks they're going to put out a terror alert. You know, they unscrambled something, or they heard something, or they got it from an anonymous informer, and every 3 weeks is they're going to attack us. The terrorists are going to attack us. We don't know where, we don't know when, we don't know how, but as long as you keep us in power, nothing is going to happen to your people. And I tell you, as long as they can keep this, you know, the people in this country so scared, it's going to, you know, it's going to be hard
well,
for the Democrats.
Well, that was the key to George Bush's electoral victory, if he had a victory, if it wasn't, you know, rigged elections and voting machines and Ken Blackwell in Ohio and whatnot, if he actually won in 2004. And
yes,
for me, that's
still
enough. Well, to some extent, yes. And for the presidency, I think that you could argue that that's the case. But I don't think that it'll work for the House and Senate. People vote on these things basically on local issues. They're not saying, you know, I'm concerned that the terrorists are going to get us. They're saying, I'm concerned that my street has potholes in it. I'm concerned that we are losing our Medicaid. I'm concerned that my property taxes are going through the ceiling because they've cut off federal grants to the states. These are the kinds of issues. And the Republicans are on the wrong side of all of these issues.
Absolutely. But you know, on the Terry Schiavo case, I mean, just to point out what hypocrites they are up there. You know, assume for one minute that Terry's husband's name would be Michelle instead of Michael. And, you know, Michelle, her lover, you know, in a civil union would beg the politicians up there to keep her lover alive so she can love her and nurture her. I mean, don't you think they would have jumped up in a New York minute and said, the courts have decided, the courts have decided?
Pull the plug.
Absolutely. I
don't know.
You.
I don't know, Virginia. I don't do hypotheticals, but I, you know, it's an interesting one. I think the biggest thing, and thank you for calling. Thank you very much for calling. I think the biggest thing is the extreme hypocrisy in all of this. And I think one of the fascinating things is the source of funding. But here you've got Fox News now projecting, you know, anchors on cable injected opinion in the Schiavo coverage. Media Matters laying stuff out, how Fox News is spinning the news and so many of the news. Jeb Bush's expert undercuts delay. Dr. Jay Wolfison, a doctor and a lawyer, personally appointed by Jeb Bush to be the guardian ad litem for Terry Schiavo, to be her representative, her legal representative, in October of 2003. And this guy wrote a report. He's the guardian. He appointed by Jeb Bush. He wrote a report which said, and I quote, that he concludes that all the appropriate and proper elements of the law have been followed and met. The law has done its job well. The courts, which supported the decision to suspend feeding, this is back in 2003 when they pulled her tube, have carefully and diligently adhered to the prescribed civil processes and evidentiary guidelines and have painfully and diligently applied the required tests in a reasonable, conscientious, and professional manner. Highly competent, I'm still reading from his report, highly competent, scientifically based physicians using recognized measures and standards have deduced with a high degree of medical certainty that Teresa is in a persistent vegetative state. This evidence is compelling, like the fact that they had a CAT scan where they x-rayed her skull and it's full of spinal fluid instead of brain. Teresa's neurological tests and CT scans indicate objective measures of the persistent vegetative state. In other words, you can see it in the physical structure of what is left of the brain that used to be there. And then he says, individuals have come forward indicating that there are therapies and treatments and interventions that can literally regrow Teresa's functional cerebral cortex brain tissue, which has shrunken, restoring parts of all her functions. There is no... And there's this doctor that they've been trotting out. They've had him on TV, and they called it. They said he was nominated for a Nobel Prize. It's because somebody wrote a letter. His congressman wrote a letter to the Nobel Committee. Right? This guy's a quack. He has been accused of quackery. He's been censored by the medical boards. He peddles phony therapies. He has never been able to demonstrate that he's been able to bring somebody back from one of these states. And this guy is the guy that they trot out on national television. Oh, yes, we can do something about her. Then why haven't he? Why hasn't he in 15 years? Michael Schiavo was flying her all over the country. They tried a thalamic stimulator. The thalamus is part of the brainstem, where they actually implanted something in her brain and tried to jumpstart her. This was back 15 years ago, 14 years ago. I mean, they tried everything with this. And over the time, it's just more and more of her cortex has just disintegrated away and been replaced by spinal fluid. Individuals have come forward indicating that there are therapies and treatments. He says, there is no scientifically valid medical recognized evidence that this has been done or is possible even in rats, according to the president of the American Society for Neurotransplantation. And then he concludes this, the guy, the doctor and lawyer, he's both a doctor and a lawyer, Dr. Jay Wolfison, who was appointed by Jeb Bush personally. I have concluded, he said, that from the medical records and consultation with medical experts, that the scope and weight of the medical information within the file concerning Teresa Schiavo consists of competent, well-documented information that she is in a persistent vegetative state with no likelihood of improvement. He also spent time with Schiavo, something that Bill Frist did not do. And he said, quote, he was not able to independently determine that there were consistent, repetitive, intentional, reproductive, interactive, and aware activities. In other words, she's in a vegetative state. There's no brain there. She's not only brain dead, there's no brain there. 1-866-889-8894. Kate in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Kate.
Hi, Tom. Ever since I've been listening to you, I've become more aware of paying attention to what happens when a big story breaks that might bring them down. And so I was paying attention when the New York Times expose of the fake news came up.
Yeah.
What was going on? The first thing I noticed that there was another little anthrax scare. But that didn't go anywhere. But there, it was there in the news right around.
That's right. That's right. They trotted out a get
exactly.
scared, get scared. And then they trotted out Terry Schiavo.
And exactly right. And what they do is they latch on to something that you better pay attention to. Like this Schiavo thing and the Congress and all of that, we can't afford not to pay attention to what they're doing and keep our focus on that fake news story, which is huge.
Right.
But they've successfully diverted our attention, and here we are talking
about
it.
With more fake news. Yeah, you're right. You're right. And I even tried to start the program with the whole thing about, you know, the way that this administration, in a Stalinesque fashion, is regulating, is controlling, with using our tax dollars to control who can go to public events by public figures.
Well, and they're masterfully controlling what our debate is about right now, and I don't think that we should not be talking about what's going on with Terry Schiavo, but at the same time, we should be really aware that a huge, huge story that could have created the, you know, could have broken through.
Taken down the White House.
Yes.
Could have taken down the White House.
And successfully been.
And it's been pushed off the front pages by this
thing. Completely
off
to the side, and it's probably never going to have the kind of energy it had before. It's another one of those, oh, well, the timing, it's gone.
Yep, that's right. The news cycle
has moved along. Somehow we need to keep bringing these things forward, keep talking about the news, fake news, you know.
Well, and to what extent, you know, has the Schiavo case been propelled into the media by more fake news? Here
well,
we
yeah.
have, for example, a consortium of conservative foundations with $2 billion in total assets. This is who is bankrolling this effort to keep the feeding tube attached. It's
well,
called a philanthropy roundtable.
You pointed that out, and I think that's one of your services, really, is that you keep pointing out, well, this itself is fake news, and the aspects of it which are just being fed to us.
Yeah, it's absolutely outrageous. Kate, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. Let me just share some of this. Schindler lawyer, this is the you know, put the tube back in, right? Her parents' lawyer. Of course, the husband's lawyer is working pro bono for free. Schindler lawyer Pat Anderson was paid directly by the Anti-Abortion Legal Defense Foundation, which claims on their website that they've already spent over $300,000 in the case. Much of the support for the Life Legal Defense Foundation, in turn, this is from a post in the Daily Cause today, by the way, by John Eisenberg. Much of the support for the Life Legal Defense Foundation in turn comes from the Alliance Defense Fund, an anti-gay rights group which collected more than $15 million in private donations in 2002 and admits to having spent money on the Schiavo case in the six figures, according to a Palm Beach Post article. The Alliance Defense Fund in between 94 and 2002 received $142,000 from the Philanthropy Roundtable members. Wesley Smith and Rita Marker also work for organizations that get funding from Roundtable Markers. Smith is a paid fellow at the Discovery Institute, a Seattle-based think tank that advocates the teaching of creationist intelligent design theory in public schools. These are the folks who are funding this media circus. Fake news to divert us, as Kate so eloquently pointed out, from fake news. The real scandal in America. 10 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Common sense in broadcasting for a change.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'm just an old truth teller.
Yes.
I'm your candid friend.
And welcome back.
I'm not
4.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Chuck in Los Alamos, New Mexico, listening on KRSN. Hey, Chuck, what's up?
Hey, Tom. If anything should convince everybody that's listening to this program to get a living will,
this is it, yeah.
This should do it.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want George W. Bush deciding your fate.
No, you really don't. The ultimate dimwit on the planet deciding my fate. I'm going to be vegetative for 15 years. I don't think so.
Yeah. Chuck, thanks a lot for the call. I agree. Rachel in Santa Fe. Hey, Rachel. Oops, I'm sorry. I pushed the wrong button. There's Rachel.
Yeah,
hey, Rachel.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yeah. Hi, Tom.
What's up?
My very simple strategy to thwart the fundamentalist move to have this poor woman extended beyond her natural lifespan is to simply spread the rumor that she's lesbian.
Well, that essentially was the suggestion that I think either Bridget or Kate had come up with earlier. And then all of a sudden the right wing and the right to lifers would flee like crazy. Tim in Illinois on the line. And thank you, Rachel, for calling. Tim in Illinois on the line. Hey, Tim, what's up?
Hi, Tom. The scope of this extreme right wing mind control that's going on is far beyond anything I could ever imagine would happen in this country.
It's like a bad science fiction novel.
I feel like I'm in a preposterous dream, like the one that recurs in the film Groundhog Day.
Yeah, there you go. There you go.
I want to make just a little informational note today.
Very quick.
For those who want to see the recent anti-war protests, there is a half-hour streaming video of them on democracynow.org.
Great. Okay.
And a fairly good slideshow in the New York Times site.
Okay, great. We'll pass that along. I got to move along here. Vince in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Vince, what's up? We got about 30 seconds.
Hi, Tom. I just want to talk about the hypocrisy of President Bush when he was the governor of Texas. He naturally signed a bill that allowed them to pull the tubes of people who were vegetated.
If you can't pay.
That's correct. If you couldn't,
the hospital can give you 10 days' notice if you can't pay and you can't find someplace else to go.
Right. But plus the fact, I think Tom DeLay has completely sidestepped the real issues. He's diverted attention from his lack of ethics. And you have to take.
This has been a boon to Tom DeLay, and right. The Republican talking point memo that was floating around the Senate. This will really energize our base. Yeah.
And there's been tens of billions of dollars at the same time taken from poor people, old people.
These guys want to cut Medicare, which is the thing that's keeping Terri Schiavo alive.
Right, exactly.
It's mind-boggling. Vince, thanks so much for the call. I do appreciate it. I bet we're out of time here, at least with this hour of the program. Two more to come. The Tom Hartman Radio Program, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the SCAFE Foundation.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without...
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back here, my friends. You'll recall a week or so ago when the Senate voted down the Clear Skies Act, we reported on that issue here, the mercury in the air, Bill Clinton's regulations, George W. Bush's idea about trading futures, essentially, trading pollution credits is the word. And thought we'd get an expert on this. Bob Ferguson is the president of the Center for Science and Public Policy. And Bob, you're of the opinion that there's a lot of alarmism around this issue.
That's an understatement, Tom.
Okay, tell us about that.
Mercury represents, I think, another example of EPA extremism in setting standards for a regulatory target that are and largely disregard any contrary science at all. And it appears designed for a predetermined outcome. An interesting book that came out recently, you may have heard of Michael Crichton's book, State of Fear. It's talking about climate change alarmism.
Right.
But one of the things he does in this book is deeply, though it's a novel, it's deeply footnoted on peer-reviewed science. In the back, he expresses his concern as a trained physician and having science background that we literally live in a state of fear that radical environmental groups have been the last two decades been using all kinds of scare campaigns and tactics to advance both their fundraising goals and their political goals. And with mercury, it's especially grievous because they actually are potentially harming the very people they're supposed to be protecting, which is pregnant women and fetuses and children.
Okay, well, let's talk about that. The Centers for Disease Control, which I don't think fundraises. They're paid for with our tax dollars. Centers for
Correct.
Disease Control just came out and said that the levels of mercury currently in the environment are causing over 600,000 children a year to experience excessive exposure to mercury. That is above the threshold safe for humans in the womb. Why would you characterize this as extremist or alarmist?
Well, because they didn't say it to begin with. And one thing we have to look at, the extreme, what EPA did, you talked about the safety level. It's called an RFD, okay, a reference dose.
Right.
And this is supposed to be the level, according to EPA, which you can consume a substance every day of your life for 70 years and not have any ill effects, okay?
Okay.
What they did is they have a double safety factor built into what even can be remotely considered a subtle neurological effect. So they had a 10-time safety factor, then they made another 10-time safety factor out of that. So they pushed the RFD so extremely low that it's absolutely ridiculous. It's the lowest RFD of any government agents from this country in any other country in the world.
Well, I have their study. I have their study here, Bob, and it says that 637,233 American children are born each year with mercury levels exceeding 5.8 micrograms per liter, a level associated with brain damage and loss of IQ. That's pretty unambiguous.
Yeah. Well, see, what you're looking at is parts per billion here. Okay.
Right.
And what the RFD
parts per billion. I mean,
you
take 25. You know, a microgram, you know, the difference between a milligram and a microgram. I mean, microgram, we're talking very, very tiny quantities. Sometimes things in very tiny quantities can have tremendous effect. I mean, you take 25 micrograms, that's an amount that it would be invisible. 25 micrograms of LSD, and you're gone for a whole day.
Okay, well, you want me to explain what the science is on this?
Sure.
In the NHANES study, what they did is they looked at 1,709 women, okay, aged 16 to 49 years of age.
Right.
Now, keep in mind that the RFD, the base dose level is 58 parts per billion. You have a safety level of 10 times at 5.8, okay?
Right, one-tenth of that.
Now, what Mike Bolger, FDA, said, all this demonstrates is that 8% of the women, which are over the 5.8 parts per billion, still have a safety level of eightfold. So that's where the alarmism comes in.
So you're saying
that children are being damaged, your brain you know, functions being damaged in these studies.
Right, we're having an explosion of autism in the United States right now, and I'm assuming you saw the study that was published in Science News, New Scientist. I think it was in Nature originally, about 4 weeks ago, showing an epidemiological correlation between autism and mercury exposure, and that there
this is not the same kind of mercury. That's a totally different issue. This is methylmercury.
Right.
That is not methylmercury.
And, well, mercury changes forms as it moves through the food chain. I mean, as it gets metabolized by plants and animals, it gets converted into various different forms. Just because it's coming out of a smokestack.
You're talking about literally two different issues here. See, this is one of the confusing things about mercury, is in what form the mercury is in. And what I was going to tell you is when you look at the data for the 705 children in the Haines study, every one of them was below half of the RFD at 2.3 instead of 5.8 is the so-called RFD.
Well, why is the CDC saying this then? Why is our government telling us that we have a problem and you're telling us that we don't?
No, I'm not telling you that. This is what the scientific literature is telling you.
Well, you're telling me that the scientific literature is telling me that, but I'm looking at the scientific literature and I'm seeing something different. I'm seeing here the EPA. Is a new study published today calculated the U.S. loses $8.7 billion annually due to the impact of mercury on children's brain development. The National Institutes of Health published this thing. It's on NIH.gov. This is another one published on February 28th. Quote, before they take their first breath, as many as 600,000 babies may suffer permanent brain damage from their mother's exposure to mercury pollution. And you're saying no. Why?
That's utter nonsense.
Yeah.
And let me give you another reason. The data you're looking at there was, there's another Haines study that came out a year later, okay? What you're looking at is a 1999-2000 survey. That showed that 7.8% of the women were above the RFD, which I explained to you already, and Michael Bulger, FDA, says you still have an eight-fold safety level, eight-fold, not 8%, eight-fold, okay? Now, what's interesting, if this is such a huge problem, the latest data for the Haines survey is 2001-2002 survey, guess what? It drops down from 7.8% of women above it to 3.9%.
Well, we do have a problem here, don't we? We have 43 states right now that have more than 2,148 active mercury advisories for their waterways, saying don't eat the fish in these waterways. If you swim in them, don't even drink the water.
How can you say
we don't have it? No, well, they say don't eat the fish. Whatever a mercury advisory
says. They don't say don't eat the fish.
Okay, well, what?
Look. If someone wants to go to my website,
sure.
www.scienceandpolicy.org, okay, we just did a 68-page review of all the literature on state fish advisories, and it makes it very clear what's going on there.
Right. Well, here's my question, Bob. We're talking with Bob Ferguson.
Sure.
He's the president of the Center for Science and Public Policy, and your website is say it again.
It's scienceandpolicy.org.
Okay, scienceandpolicy.org. And right. I understand that the Center for Science and Public Policy is a division of this group that Senator Malcolm Wallop started back in 1996, the Frontiers of Freedom, and that you are funded in large part by ExxonMobil. ExxonMobil, according to their annual report, in 2001, gave $40,000. In 2002, $232,000. 2003, $95,000. 2003, another $50,000. 2003, another $50,000. And the president of the group that created your group, George Landreth, told the New York Times, ExxonMobil has determined that we are effective at what we do. We make it possible. We like to make it possible to do more of that, talking about promoting Exxon's point of view. How can you say that the CDC is a special interest group or radical environmentalists are special interest groups when you guys are taking the money from ExxonMobil?
I'm explaining to you exactly what the data say. Let me address your question, because when someone goes there, it demonstrates that, number one, they're ignorant of the science, and number two, they really don't have an argument. Because, nobody can pay you to change the laws of physics.
No, but people can certainly pay you to spin the laws of physics. I mean, look at your colleague, Fred Singer.
None of these people are being paid by anybody.
None of what people?
The people who write the papers that I'm giving you the literature from, I don't make this stuff up. We do detailed peer-reviewed literature. That's all we use.
They're not being paid by anybody?
I'm sorry?
They're not being paid by anybody?
No, I'm saying the people who write the papers, like it appear in Science or Nature, or professional journals.
Right, the papers that said that we have 600,000 babies who are exposed to mercury in the womb.
Let me tell you where the 600,000 came from. It simply isn't true. Okay?
Okay.
What they did is they extrapolated from this data of 7.8% women, 300,000.
Yeah, I think you've already told us this.
Somebody at EPA decided, you know what? The cord mercury level is actually 1.7 what it is in the woman's blood. So, therefore,
here's the problem. I got it. You've already told us that twice, Bob. Here's the problem that I have. The EPA is us. Right, the EPA is the federal government. The EPA is we doing our business. I mean, in the United States, the thing that distinguishes us from the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, is that our government is supposed to represent us. I mean, it doesn't always, but it's supposed to, at least in theory. Whereas ExxonMobil is not us. ExxonMobil is a corporation that, by law, has to do and act in a way that maximizes shareholder value first and foremost, regardless of the truth. And you're funded by ExxonMobil, and the EPA is funded by us. And you're calling them environmental extremists. I'm confused.
Yeah. No, you're not confused. You're not listening.
Okay.
This is a total red herring, sir.
I will listen very carefully.
I'm explaining to you. If you look at our reports, these reports are from the peer-reviewed literature of scientists who are leaders in their field, epidemiology and toxicology, emissions and deposition, and all the stuff that goes into this issue. And we try to clearly lay out what is the science here, okay?
So what should we do about mercury in the United States? What should we do about we've got 15 or 20 tons of mercury. Right now it's around 15 tons a year being emitted by our power plants. It's going to go up to 20 tons over the next 5 to 10 years. The Clinton guidelines would have cut it down to 5 tons. What should we do?
Well, first of all, let's look at the policies of this. The Clinton administration for 8 years had all the data. If they were concerned about mercury, they would have issued a mercury rule. They didn't issue a mercury rule until 36 hours after Gore versus Clinton was decided in the Supreme Court. Now, that's awful funny right there.
Why?
Well, I don't know. You have to ask Carol Browner why. If she thought this was such enormous concern, why didn't they offer a mercury rule themselves?
Well, they did. I mean, they did in a way that you think the timing was fishy, but at least they did. I mean, maybe they were afraid before that that if they offered this mercury rule, that they'd have ExxonMobil crawling down their backs and they wouldn't get any more campaign money. I mean, Clinton wasn't exactly clean when it came to taking money from corporations either.
I don't really think that's the reason. I think you're partly right. The political reason was that this is so extreme. They're attacking coal. And they would lose the state of West Virginia, which they did.
Yeah. Okay. So there were politics involved.
The case,
so
they suddenly found out that it was worth making a rule on.
Right. So they finally did the right thing because politics weren't involved anymore. Is that what you're saying?
It's not. No, I don't think it's the right thing.
Okay. So they finally did the wrong thing because politics weren't involved anymore.
No. Look.
We got it. We have about 30 seconds, Bob. I'll let you make the final point here.
My final point is this. That there's a lot of alarmism going on. There is no woman or child in this country eating fish from our supermarkets and restaurants that is any danger of mercury poisoning, period. And that's clearly what the literature shows. That's
okay.
What the FDA says.
Bob Ferguson, president of the Center for Science and Public Policy. Bob, give your website one more time.
It's scienceandpolicy.org.
Great. People can check it out, make up their own mind. Bob, thanks a lot for being on the program.
Thanks for your time.
I appreciate it. It's a Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to comment on that little discussion. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Well, I think our chat room has been sipping the mercury cocktails here. Rama says he's going to prove this guy right. Somebody's going to take a bath in mercury. Somebody else says, I'll have an order of fries and scrambled eggs and fries with a side order of mercury. Base Cop says, I enjoy my mercury fillings. I got to tell you, mercury fillings is one of the major sources of mercury exposure in the United States. It's causing a lot of concern. About, I don't know, 15 years ago or so, I went in and had all my mercury fillings removed. And now they're saying, you know, sometimes that's dangerous because if it's not done with a high-speed air vacuum going, the mercury vapor that's emitted when you drill the things out is It's like, who knows what to do? I mean, it's just... Welcome to the wonderful world of science. Welcome back, my friends. 25 minutes after the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. News without conflicts of global corporate interest. Our talking points don't come from ExxonMobil, shall we say. Xavier in Santa Cruz on the line. Hey, Xavier, what's on your mind?
Hey, hi, Tom. That was quick.
Yeah.
When you were talking about using the LSD as an example, I thought that was great to give people an idea about micrograms. But the problem with difference between LSD and mercury is, I understand it, I have 2 points after I get...
The number one one is that LSD gets metabolized and flushed out of the body,
exactly.
And mercury doesn't. It sticks around forever.
Exactly. That was my point. I have another question for you, too.
Yeah.
You used to do this thing, I think it was on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, the NLP classes.
Right, yeah.
And I don't...
We haven't done it for the last couple of weeks. It just we've got a bunch of stuff going on here right now, which I'll be making some announcements about in the next few weeks, that have just had us so busy that, frankly, I haven't been able to do it right, and so I decided to put it on hold.
We're going to come back to it.
Yeah, we're going to come back to it in early May.
Excellent. So, thank you.
Sure. Thanks a lot for the call, Xavier. Good to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. But first, we have Ellen Ratner with us, the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Hey, Ellen.
Well, as you know, the president is meeting with President Fox of Mexico and also with the Prime Minister of Canada. They're going to be talking about the borders and the fact that...
Do you really think so?
But what's more interesting...
I have a feeling that there's going to be a photo op here, but I mean, it's only a 2 or 3 hour meeting,
isn't it? Well, that's all there is. It's a photo op. They won't come up with anything because, of course, President Fox is totally opposed to the wall that President Bush wants to put up. And so there you have it.
Well, you've got about 10% of Mexico's GDP right now is money coming into Mexico from illegal Mexicans living in the United States, working and sending money home. And then you've got on the Bush side, you've got all these Bush funders, particularly in the agricultural industry and the construction trades industry, who are profitable because they've got all this illegal cheap labor. And so on both sides, they want to keep the border open. The only people getting screwed are we, the people of America, of the United States.
Absolutely. Well, anyhow, while the president is doing all this, of course, they had a little press availability, and President Bush says he is watching very carefully the whole issue with Terri Schiavo and what the courts are doing.
And thank goodness she doesn't live in Texas, because she would have been put to death a long time ago if she...
Under his ruling. It's 33 pages long. I actually printed it off and read it. And what the family is now saying, I don't know if you know the latest, the family is now saying that they're going to appeal to the full appellate court.
I thought the appellate court had it. They were going to take it to the Supreme Court.
I think they're going to ask for the entire appellate court.
Oh, you mean all, what is it, 11 members or something like that?
Right. And then go to the Supreme Court.
Yeah. It's a tragic drama, Ellen. And what's amazing is the hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of dollars that's coming from groups like the SCAFE Foundation, you know, via all these front groups and these anti-abortion and anti-gay groups that are funding the family of Terri Schiavo in this thing, whereas, you know, her husband is he worked for 4 years just aggressively trying to resuscitate. And finally they started doing these CAT scans and finding out that her skull is full of spinal fluid. There's no brain left there, or very little.
None at all. And what they're putting up these discredited nurses, this doctor that claims that he was nominated for the Nobel Prize, which he wasn't.
Right.
A congressman sent a letter nominating him for a Nobel Prize.
I mean, the guy's a quack.
Same as being nominated.
Yeah, it's a quack. It's a national embarrassment. Ellen Ratner, thanks so much for being with us and giving us our update today.
Mañana.
Okay, we'll talk to you tomorrow. Great to hear from you. 29 minutes past the hour.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, "We eliminate the middleman"? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how...
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
That's our one small hope. It's a pretty good one, actually. Welcome to the radio home of democracy, the No Boring Zone, the Tom Hartman radio program. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk. Okay, enough platitudes. Let's go to Ann in Sarasota, Florida on the line. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number. Hey, Ann.
Hi. Regarding the Terry Schiavo case, I think all of that could probably be resolved pretty easily is if an independent panel of doctors, like not tied to the parents or not tied to the husband, evaluated Terry Schiavo.
It's already happened, Ann. It was, in fact, the doctor was appointed by Jeb Bush personally. And the physician, the MD, who Jeb Bush personally appointed, concluded back in 2003 that they should pull a plug on her. That there was no possibility of recovery. That's when they did the CAT scans and they discovered that most of the inside of her skull is filled with spinal fluid instead of brain.
Okay, so why isn't that information coming out? I think part of the problem with the
family... This is no secret. I read it in the newspaper.
Well, part
you
of
won't
problem,
hear it on Fox News.
Well, Fox News. Remember, Fox News is a station that also said they can lie. Remember the thing about...
Down in Florida, Fox...
Thing about, you know, that they wanted some of their reporters to doctor evidence and that reporters got upset because they got fired over it and they said, hey, you have to tell the truth.
Right.
But back to the Schiavo thing, there's a lot of controversy about what was going on in the lady's life with her husband when she had this mysterious illness or accident.
It wasn't a mysterious illness. She had bulimia.
That caused the, her to be unconscious. There was a child supposedly that he fathered during that time period with another lady that he's paying child support on, all this kind of stuff.
What does any of that though have to do with whether or not somebody is in a persistent vegetative state and we should let them go?
Well, I think part of the problem is they don't want to let it go, but I know you're saying that it was an independent doctor appointed by Bush, but I have problems with Bush appointing it. They need to have a mutually agreeable and decide it once and for all and be done, the same as you would in any kind of mediation or arbitration kind of thing.
Well, this has happened over and over again. This happened in Florida. They went through a whole series of judges. They went through a whole series of different doctors, and every single court, every single judge, Republicans and Democrat appointed, ruled the same way, and finally, Jeb Bush had to get an act. They passed an act of Congress in Florida to try and drag this thing out. That finally exhausted. All the experts said, "Hey, you know, there's no brain there. You're not going to see anything come back." And that got exhausted. And so now Tom DeLay gets into the act, and we see this memo circulating among the Republicans saying this is a great political opportunity for us.
Right, and I have problems with that. My main concern is I just don't want to see anyone that truly has some potential to recover to be shut off just for the sake of shutting them off because they don't want to pay the bills or that kind of thing.
I absolutely agree with you, Ann.
To change the topic real quickly, I have other big issues, too, with what I'm seeing on the international markets with what's happening to the dollar and that a lot of nations are dumping the dollar and going to euros, and I don't know why that isn't in the press. And why it isn't on the number one spot with Bush, because if the dollar goes, so goes our economy.
I know. And in fact, I have a whole hour prepared on that topic here, which will probably be the third hour of the program today. In fact, there's now a bank that's offering minimum investment of $2,500 where you can actually you can open checking accounts in other currencies. And people are bailing out of the dollar. I mean, Bill Gates is bailing out of the dollar. Warren Buffett for two
Warren
years
Buffett,
has been
right.
out of the dollar. The Chinese have said that they're going to start diversifying. The Japanese have talked about diversify is fancy legal speak for get out of the dollar. And the reason for all of this is because George W. Bush has run us into the ditch. He has run us into so much debt that the rest of the world is looking at us going, these guys are bankrupt. And it's a high wire act that the conservatives, the Republicans did, this starve the beast strategy of Grover Norquist. If we can create so much debt in the United States that there's a crisis, then maybe that will force Congress to finally do away with these awful socialistic programs. They really and truly in their hearts believe it's socialism, like Social Security, Medicaid, Medicare, aid for poor elderly people, home heating aid in the Northeast, all the, you know, food stamps. welfare, all of these programs which they consider socialism and they think there should be no place for in the American mainstream. And that's a reasonable argument for us to have if we had it on the merits of the topic itself. Well, they say, well, we know that 80-90% of Americans support most of these programs, and so we can't get rid of them, even though we believe that they're evil socialistic programs. We can't get rid of them by just bringing the topic up and having a debate and a vote. And so what we're going to do is we're going to create a financial crisis so that the government simply won't have any money, the star of the beast, and it'll have to cut these programs, which is what they're doing, of course. You know, Bush's new budget just does just that, although it's just the beginning. But in the process, they've created such a fiscal crisis to accomplish this internal domestic political and social agenda that they have thrown our nation now into an international economic crisis and run us right up to the edge of bankruptcy.
But they always have enough money for things like war in Iraq, where Halliburton and all those kind of companies are just runaway, no bid, overruns.
I know, it's
a ton of money and tax cuts for the very wealthy.
I know, it is absolutely mind boggling. It really is. And thanks for the call. I appreciate it. I mean, that's not inconsistent with the Star of the Beast principle, by the way. The first step of Star of the Beast is keep taxing the middle class and the poor. In fact, if you can get them working 50, 60, 70 hours a week instead of 40 hours a week, they'll be less politically active. Get rid of the labor unions. That's how these nasty, rabble, average working people exercise their political muscle is by organizing into labor. Let's get rid of them. And then we, the corporate elites, can rule appropriately. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Vince in Newcastle, Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, Vince, what's up?
Hi. That gentleman you had on seemed to be a spokesperson for corporate interests. USA Today, dated 8/24/2004, an interesting article about mercury. It states that one-third of the nation's lake waters and one-quarter of its riverways are contaminated with mercury. It goes on to state, and this is by the Environmental Protection Agency, but it goes on to state that...
But you keep in mind, Vince, the EPA is a radical extremist environmentalist special interest group.
Yeah, sure. As states issued warnings for mercury and other pollutants in 2003 for nearly 850,000 miles of U.S. rivers, a 65% increase over 2002, and 14 million acres of lakes, the warning level is the highest ever reported by the EPA.
Right.
Now, where's this man coming from? All these people, EPA, they're crazy or what?
Well, that's his point, yeah, that they're being excessively cautious and that they're doing it because they have a political agenda, because probably they're Democrats or something. I don't want to speak for him. I let him give his website out enough times, so that people can go check it out for themselves. But in my opinion, that's what he was presenting to us is the definition of junk science. Although these guys love to say that what the scientists are saying and the EPA is saying is junk science, and I'm assuming that my listeners are intelligent enough to sort this stuff out.
Well, let's hope so. But this is ludicrous. These gentlemen come on, whatever you want to call them, and they're nothing but just excused artists for Bush and his administration. It's the same guys that will go up and they'll want to drill now because we have gasoline at $3 a gallon.
Right.
In Alaska.
Right, but here's the scary thing, though, Vince. Folks like this guy are, you know, he comes on my program, and he was very angry by the time we were done. I mean, you know, you could hear him hang up.
He was insulting.
Yeah. Well, I've had worse, and but the bottom line is that typically what he's used to is going on talk shows and having people go, oh, really? Oh, tell us more.
Exactly.
Oh, you're so wise. Oh, thank you. And they don't get challenged. And I'm not talking about just right-wing talk radio. They go on CNN, they go on Fox, they go on ABC, NBC, and CBS. I mean, you know, General Electric has their little pollution problem in the Hudson River, and they own NBC. Mm-hmm. And you wonder why Brian Williams, now the new NBC anchor, says that it's part of his duty as an American to listen to Rush Limbaugh every day. Right? It's all of a sudden things kind of fall into place. Vince, I got to move along.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Chris in New Mexico on the line. Hey, Chris, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Speaking of right wing radio, I just got off the phone with Rush Limbaugh, who incidentally, right out loud in front of God and everybody, said that Social Security is nothing but a welfare program. That's all it ever will be.
Well, at least he's being honest about it. I mean,
yeah, that's true.
I salute intellectual honesty. There are a few conservatives out there who will come out and tell you that that's what they believe. And
yeah.
and I'm all in favor of them saying that. I mean, I disagree with them. But or for that matter, I would, you know, if you just want to use that language, I'd say, okay, fine, it's a welfare program. Now the question is, do we, the people of the United States of America, want to have welfare programs or do we not? I mean, the simple fact of the matter is, for example, just take the state of New Mexico. Right now in New Mexico, among the elderly, you've got a poverty level around 10%, just a little above 10%. Take away Social Security, it rises to over 47%.
Oh, I agree.
Do we want that or not? Rush Limbaugh wants that. I don't. That's the difference.
What I talked to Rush about was the Terri Schiavo thing, and he asked me in the course of the conversation, do you want this woman to die? And I said, yes, I do. I think at long, yes, I want the poor woman to pass with some measure of dignity. I think it's so shameful the way that she's been degraded, used as a sideshow freak to try to save the political fortunes of Tom DeLay, who's, you know, clamped onto her like a leech, hoping against hope that people will forget that his very presence in Congress feels like having a booger on your finger. Yeah, I want the poor woman to pass away. Enough is enough.
You are so evocative, Chris. And I have come to that conclusion too. I just a few days ago on this program, I was saying, hey, give her to her parents. If I was the judge, I would just give her to her parents. That was before I learned that she doesn't have any brain left.
Yeah, her cortex is actually liquefied.
Right, her cranial cavity is full of spinal fluid, and that was before I learned that for 4 years her husband was frantically flying her back and forth from the West Coast to the East, trying all these experimental therapies, took her to the best places that they could get, that the money has been the $750,000 she got from the medical malpractice lawsuit, which she wouldn't have been able to get under the legislation proposed by Bush, that has been exhausted. That's down. That fund is down to about $50,000. There's no money to argue over other than the hundreds of thousands that are being given to her parents, apparently, and their lawyers. This is not about money. This is about allowing somebody to die with dignity.
And this proves that the Republicans will stop at nothing to pander to the head spinners and the Christian right. I just like to say to everybody out there who feels differently than I do, if God wants this woman to live, she will live. He purportedly stopped the sun and caused a worldwide flood and raised Lazarus after he was dead and buried. He doesn't need our help in this, guys. He really doesn't.
There you go. Well said. Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Judy in Michigan. Hey, Judy.
Hi. Boy, I just started listening to your channel, and you are dynamite.
Well, thank you.
But
you must be listening on WTKG in Grand Rapids or WSDS in Ann Arbor.
Out of Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti.
Yeah, WSDS, Salem. Yep.
I agree with that other caller. I mean, if it's God's will for her to be here, she'll be here. But if her parents don't want that tube inserted, why don't they take her home and take care of her? And let them take care of her in a vegetated state?
Well,
I have told my son, I said, if anything ever happens to Mom, don't put me on life support. If it's God's will for me to stay here, I will. But another thing that gentleman said, I am a senior, I am disabled, and Social Security is not a welfare.
Yeah.
Not a sense of welfare.
Well, have that argument with Rush Limbaugh. I agree with you.
Yeah, and this Bush and the Congress is going to put a big hurt to us next year with the Medicare.
You bet. And it's already happening. Here we have, you know, this timeline that Mark Crispin Miller sent out to pretty much everybody. In 1990 is when Terri Schiavo, on February 25th of 1990, this is when she had her heart attack as a result of, apparently, of bulimia, of, you know, people throwing up to control their weight. And
I knew somebody like that one.
This is in February. On May 12th, she's discharged from the hospital and taken back. On June 18th, Michael has appointed her guardian. Her parents don't object. On the 30th of June, she's transferred to the Bayfront Hospital for further rehabilitation. On the September of 1990, her parents, they bring her home because Michael's living with her family. They bring her home. 3 weeks later, they return her to the College Park facility because they are, quote, overwhelmed by Terry's care needs. So her family has already had her, and they said, we don't want her. And they sent her back. And so Michael Chabot then takes, in November of 1990, takes her to California for an experimental brain stimulator treatment where they a thalamic stimulator implant her brain. That didn't work. In 1991, they returned to Florida. She's moved to the Metaplex Rehabilitation Center in Brandon. In June 19th of 91, she's transferred to Sable Palms Skill Care Facility where she receives continual neurological testing, regular aggressive therapy. I mean, they tried it in 91, 92. In May of 92, they finally Terry's husband Michael moves out of her parents' house, Robert Mary Schindler. In August of 92, they get this medical malpractice thing, and $750,000 is put in a trust for her medical care, and that's what's down to $50,000 now.
Although, it's sad to see her the way they show her on TV. I mean
they are using this little tiny clip of what was a long videotape where they found the little pieces where her random motions just happen to coincide with her mother moving into view, and it is stage managed. It is absolutely terrible. Judy, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. It's great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. Barbara in Illinois on the line. Hey, Barbara.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to thank you for your program and getting out the word, and I had a quick question. I'm not going to be able to hear you third hour. And a woman asked you a little while ago about the falling dollar, and I want to ask you, what does modest, middle-class person with a little bit of an inheritance do to keep their savings
to keep it from going away,
being destroyed?
Yeah, Barbara, that's a complex question without a simple answer. I'm sorry, and I'm not an investment advisor. What I do tell people is, number one, get out of all debt that has the potential to rise in interest rates. If you have a mortgage, get it refinanced at a fixed rate rather than an adjustable rate, because all the adjustable rate stuff, all the credit card debt stuff, it's going to go through the roof.
Would it do any good to go to a foreign currency savings account?
It might, Barbara, but I don't know. We've got to go. It's 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent, progressive.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Staring in the face of the moment, hoping my heart has a little more room for missing you. Staring in the face of the moon.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number. Gloria in Louisiana on the line. Hey, Gloria.
Hi, Tom. I really hate to get on the Terry Schiavo matter.
That's okay.
But
everybody
I just have a question to ask that I haven't heard anybody else ask, and that is, if this was her wish and she did want to die, and if you go along with that, and Lord knows I'm not a member of the Christian right, I'm not even a Christian, but I would like to know why is it that she has to die by having a feeding tube removed? And by suffering through the dehydration and the attendant complications that can go on for several days or weeks. Why is it illegal to give her a lethal injection and allow her to die quickly, painlessly, and with dignity?
Yeah. Gloria, the reason why is because euthanasia in the United States is illegal. It is illegal to kill somebody.
But
it's not illegal to let somebody
die.
Well, no, it's not.
Isn't that what they're doing, euthanasia, you think about it?
Well, it's not legally, because what they're doing right now is they're simply letting nature take its course. Her brain has stopped working. She can't swallow, for example. She has no voluntary swallow response. If you put water in her mouth, she will drown.
But can they absolutely be sure of how... That she has any awareness at all?
She could
still be aware of pain, even though her higher brain functions.
She has none. And so, you know, legally, I mean, I agree with you. I think that we should have legal euthanasia in the United States, and I support the Oregon bill to legalize that, although the Bush administration opposes it.
Yeah, we do that much for a dog or a condemned criminal,
yeah,
and that's what I would want if I was in that situation.
Yeah, but you're not allowed that in the United States. You are in Holland and a few other countries.
Right,
But that discussion that you and I just had, and that that opinion that you expressed, is one of the reasons why the religious right is so frantic about this issue, because they see that on the horizon. In Oregon right now, there's this right to die law, right to die with dignity,
and they do not want
that door open to euthanasia. And there's some very actually good reasons not to open that door, because, you know, do you want the government making decisions about you on the one hand? On the other hand, there are people who desperately want to die. They're in terrible pain. They're terminal. They're going to go in a few weeks. Why drag it out? Anyhow, it's a complicated issue. Gloria, I appreciate the call. We got to wrap it up here. Thank you very much for calling. You are in the center of the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty?
The man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Welcome to the third hour of our program today. 7 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast. Streaming out from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. Streaming around the planet on radiopower.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org, American FM, Live 365. Welcome back. Nonpartisan voter rights organization. What is up? What is Ken Blackwell up to? What are they doing in Ohio now? Trying to hide what's going on there. I want to get into that a little bit. Share some of that with you. We've got a little bit more on Terry Schiavo here and some stuff on what's happening with the economy, betting against the dollar. Fascinating piece on this to share with you this hour. Our telephone number is area code 866. That's toll-free across the United States, 866-889-8894, if you would like to call in. If you want to drop into our chat room, give you a phone number for it, right? If you want to drop into our chat room, TomHartman.com will get you there, no matter how you spell it. And just click live chat. It'll take you over to our message board. Click live chat again, and it'll drop you into the live chat room where you can actively interact in real time with other human beings all over literally the world. We have people I know on at two continents in here at the moment, in Europe and in North America. And occasionally we get folks in Asia dropping in, and we should do a poll one of these days. It's fascinating to hear the opinions of people from around the world and participate in conversations. Welcome back to our program. Set up just last Thursday is a brand new voting rights group. It's called the American Center for Voter Rights, or for Voting Rights. And this, Brad Friedman, of bradblog.com has out, he's so good at outing this stuff that goes on. These groups that are springing up in Ohio. This group, the American Center for Voting Rights, was called to testify at yesterday's United States House Administrative Committee hearings in Columbus, Ohio, on the problems in the 2004 election. Well, it's, you know, if you're going to hold hearings into what happened in Ohio in 2004, and how is it that George W. Bush won the election by a 60,000 vote margin in Ohio, and yet there were hundreds of thousands of reports of voting irregularities and complaints issued. Well, not in, just in Ohio, across the United States, but some folks speculate, many people just coming right out and saying, if this had been a clean election, even setting aside the possibility of voting machines might have gotten hacked. I mean, just if this had been a clean election, if people had been allowed to vote, if there hadn't been phone banks calling registered Democrats and telling them that their voting date had been changed to Wednesday, or that their polling place had been changed to some other place. So they show up at the wrong place. They stand in line for 6 hours. They get up at the head of the line, and they're told, oh, I'm sorry, you're in the wrong place. You've got to go, you know, 6 miles down the road around the corner. And by the time they get there, everything's closed. If these little tricks had not happened, if there hadn't been months and months of phony front groups having people sign so-called voter registration cards, actually not even signing up to vote, people... They had two different kinds of scams going on in Ohio. One was where people thought they were signing a petition to decriminalize marijuana. Now, mostly you're going to get people, I would say, who ultimately would vote Democratic or Green who are going to sign a petition like that. And what they didn't see was that, because there was a piece of paper covering the top half of it, was that they were changing their voter registration to Republican and that they were changing the district in which they were voting, or the precinct. So they would show up where they normally vote and they wouldn't be allowed to vote there. That was going on. And there was a group, and this was happening all over the United States. There was this one group, I forget the name of them now, that was setting up tables out in front of federal buildings, out in front of malls, out in front of shopping centers, out in front of state office buildings, setting up little card tables and saying, register to vote here. As if they were like the League of Women Voters. And, of course, when you register to vote, you have the option of choosing whether you want to register as a Republican, as a Democrat, or as an independent so that you can vote in the primaries. If you register as a Republican, then you can vote in the Republican primaries. You register as a Democrat, you can vote in the Democratic primaries. You register as an independent, you can't vote in either one of those primaries. It varies from state to state, of course. But in any case, there is this thing where you get to check. And what they found was that these groups, people would register to vote, and if they checked the box that they were a Democrat, after they left, their form got torn up and thrown away. And they had witnesses to this. They had it caught on videotape. TV news departments were exposing this. And, of course, again, these people showed up at the polling places and were told, your name's not on the rolls, but I registered to vote just four weeks ago. I'm sorry, you're not here. You can't vote. And this was a campaign that went on for a half a year in the state of Ohio. Plus, of course, there was the great felon purge. We still haven't got the details on that. Ken Blackwell doesn't want to talk about that. In Florida, of course, we know that the 70,000 mostly African Americans who were kicked off the voting rolls just before the 2000 election, predominantly Democratic districts, that fewer than 1% of them were actually felons. So you get this American Center for Voting Rights, a brand new tax-exempt group, and they are going to testify before Congress to say, oh, everything was fine in Ohio. We're right here from Ohio. We're a local Ohio group. We're on a voting rights group, and everything's just fine. Turns out, the group's lead attorney, Mark F. Hearn II, and their communications director, Jim Dyke, according to bradblog.com, are longtime high-level Republican operatives employed by Bush Cheney and the National Republican Party. Testifying before Congress about how everything was fine in Ohio. We are a nonpartisan, unaffiliated voting rights group, American Center for Voting Rights. Does it get much more? Now it's not just fake news and fake journalism. Now they've got fake, what do you call it, testifiers. I'm lacking a word. What is the word for when somebody shows up in court and gives testimony? Fake witnesses? I'm sure that there's some more legal term for it than that. But in any case, this is like the old Soviet system. Don't buck the system. Yes, you can speak out as long as you say the right thing. Here we have 2 days ago in Arizona, University of Arizona student shows up at a Bush Social Security discussion, he and three friends, and they get thrown out. They're on the list. They're members of the Campus Democratic Group. No, they weren't intending to disrupt it. There was no evidence that they were going to disrupt it. They simply happened to be members of the Campus Democratic Group. And this was an event that it was paid for with your tax dollars and mine, including in part our Social Security tax dollars. And George W. Bush is saying, sorry, if you're a Democrat, you can't come into the room. This is against the law. Are you going to hear about it on NBC Evening News, where Brian Williams says that it's his duty to listen to Rush Limbaugh every day? Owned by General Electric? Somehow I rather doubt it. Are you going to hear about it on CBS Evening News with Bob Schieffer, whose brother is a business was a business partner with the Bush family? Somehow I rather doubt it. Are you going to hear about it on Faux News? Are you even going to hear about it on CNN, which in 2000, after Bush was elected, sent one of their vice presidents up to the White House to assure him that he would start getting favorable treatment on CNN? None of these guys want to lose their access because they understand that if they don't have access to the president, to the White House, they can't do their job. If they can't do their job, people will go to a different network. The White House has them by the throat. What has happened to democracy in America? Let's take a couple calls here. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. John in New England on the line. Hey, John, what's up?
Tom, that news is just really distressing. What I did was to walk out of a board meeting at our Fortune 500 company, and they asked me en masse what I was doing. I said, I'm going to listen to Tom Hartman because it's much more important than what we're discussing here at the board. So they all followed me into the conference room here, and we're listening to you over the internet, and everybody's sitting around with their mouths and their eyes wide open.
Well,
and
because greetings to your friends and your board members, John.
It's just unbelievable. All I'm saying is just America. Take to the streets. Take to the streets now. Before
well,
it's too late.
I frankly, John, we had America take to the streets the last weekend.
Yeah,
and
know.
It was not reported in the American press. It has to go deeper than that. We need to wake people up, and we need to get people politically
this
active.
This is so frustrating.
People have to realize that politics is 365 days a year. The Republicans figured it out back. You know, I worked on Barry Goldwater's campaign. I was 13 years old. I went door to door for Barry Goldwater. In my heart, I knew he was right. I still think that Barry Goldwater had a lot of good things to say. In fact, just last year, I reread his final. He wrote two autobiographies, and his last one, No Regrets. I still think highly of the guy. He was a man of integrity. He was wrong on a lot of issues, but he was a man of integrity.
But
are those politicians today?
Tom,
I'm not finding them.
Tom, even if we were to start doing a grassroots campaign now, leading up to the next election, it's going to take that many years, the 4 years, to really build up a base. And then what are we up against? We're up against the other Bush from Florida.
Yeah,
because
Jeb.
He's definitely going to run the next election.
No, he's going to run in 2012.
Unless
Dick Cheney – well, see, my guess is – my prediction, the prediction I made back a year – or back right after the election was that when it was clear that George Bush was being declared the winner was that – probably a year, perhaps as much as 2 years before the 2008 election, probably just after the 2006 elections. So my guess would be like January of 2007. Dick Cheney is going to take a medical leave. And somebody, Bill Frist, Jeb Bush, Chuck Hagel, whoever has the most dirt on George W. Bush, in all probability, is going to become vice president and thus heir apparent for the 2008 election. That's how they're going to handle it.
Tom, can you think of another scenario that's taken place in world history that mimics what's going on now? And what was the result of that particular happening?
Yeah, you've heard me rant about that, John, before. There are a number of them, and it's not a pretty picture. Probably the closest, frankly, is Benito Mussolini. You can talk about Hitler and Stalin, but people get all hysterical about that. Yeah, Mussolini, he said the way to create, and with the best intentions, he was a nationalist, he believed in his nation, the way to create a nation that is so strong that it can never disintegrate is to bring business into government and government into business, to get them into bed with each other, and he merged corporations and government. In fact, he dissolved parliament and replaced it by a group called the Cameo di Fascio Corporazioni, however you say it in Italian, the Chamber of Fascist Corporations. And individual districts were no longer represented by elected officials. They were represented by the heads of the largest corporations in those districts. And that's how they did it, and he called that fascism. He came up with that word, and we're not that far from it right now. John,
thanks
for the call. Good to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to custom.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back to the No Boring Zone, the radio home of democracy where you have the power. Well, if you call in anyway, 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Or if you start talking to your neighbors and your friends, you go to door-to-door, join a political party. Join the Republican Party if you're inclined. I would love to see people with integrity take back that party. Join the Democratic Party if you're so inclined. Join the Greens. You can actually do, you know, more than one. I suppose you can't register for more than one, but you can certainly participate in more than one. Get out there and get active. Now, having said what I said to John in New England just a minute ago about the one of the folks in our chat room gave me the correct pronunciation here, and let's see if it's just scrolled off. Let me bounce it back. It is the, where did it go? I lost it. This is the problem with so much conversation going on so fast here. It just scrolls right off. Anyway, it's the Camera de Facio de Corporaciones or something like that. Anyway, I couldn't find it. But the point is, I am not anti-corporate. I'm not even anti-media corporate. I mean, our newest affiliate, the newest radio station to carry this program, is a radio station in San Antonio, Texas, owned by Clear Channel, at the headquarters of Clear Channel. Clear Channel carries. I'm not opposed to big corporations. I'm not opposed to General Electric. I'm not opposed to General Motors. I'm not opposed to AT&T or Micro. What I'm opposed to is corporations asserting political power. Political power should be in the hands of we the people. Now, we the people can vote in favor or against particular corporate interests, and people work for corporations. They can get out there and be active, but it should be we the people. Not corporations. This is very simple. I be right up front about it. Right up front about it. Because I think, you know, corporate reform is a fine thing. I have a little corporation that is this radio program. I have started and run corporations. In fact, some fairly large ones. I'm not opposed to business. In fact, I'm all for business. But when business begins corrupting politics, then democracy is at risk. And I am an advocate, an absolute advocate and fan of democracy in the United States. It is absolutely necessary. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Jeff in Denver on the line. Hey, Jeff, what's up?
Comrade Thomas, do you think we should start spelling America with a K rather than a C?
I don't know, Jeff. People have been doing that. Jeff, whatever the phone is that you use, whenever you call, your volume level is about a third of everybody else's.
So I'll get a new headset and speak up.
Or dump the headset and use a regular hardwired phone. Anyhow, what's up?
Yes, speaking of the thing of how little people it takes, the activism, and since you're talking about voting right now, one is, again, it's only about a half dozen people or a dozen people are really making a difference here in the state. We actually got a through committee yesterday with our voting reform bill in Colorado. And, when you look at something like, say, the media makes it appear that there are certain issues that people are interested in. But I was writing to our Senator Allard here a few days ago, went to his web form and saw the topics that were available in the pop-up menu on the web form. And it was very interesting that one out of every seven topics was an environmental issue. It's not, environmental issues, they don't show up anymore on, you get a survey of what you're interested in.
Right. They don't even put them on the surveys anymore.
But the environmental issues were by far the most prevalent issues on the forum that Allard is apparently getting response from.
Now, Jeff, we've got about 30 seconds. You said about a half a dozen people in Denver were responsible for getting...
In Colorado, for
getting voter reform on the ballot. I mean, literally?
Well, not on the ballot. It's like getting it in the legislation into committee, into the Senate, and so forth.
And this is a half a dozen citizen activists. You're one of them.
Yeah, that's actually, there's the core group, then there's a larger group, and altogether it's probably only a couple of dozen. Yeah,
at the moment. And this is I hope everybody is listening very carefully to this, because this is, Jeff, you have demonstrated the power of people getting involved. And
it's absolutely easy.
It's easy. And yeah, that's the thing. People call up and they go, ah, the Democrats, the Republicans, whatever, they're all corrupt. And I say, well, then take them over. You know, join the party, infiltrate. And that's what you've done, Jeff. God bless you. I congratulate you.
Thanks. We have a new Democratic Party in Colorado.
Yeah, and in no small part because of you. Thank you so much.
Actually, I'm not a Democrat in that regard, but they're doing it.
Okay. Jeff, thanks for the call. 29 minutes past the hour.
But, Dad.
Tyler, we've been over this 3 times. There'll be no adults at Ed's house.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Why me, George? What have I ever done to deserve even one of the plagues that you've sown?
Yeah, why me, George?
Tell me, George, what did I ever do for a whiz kid like you to bring chaos to my home?
Why me, George?
Lord, help me, Jesus. We didn't vote for him, but we can't ignore him, I fear. He's using your name to advance his own game. Now we're in doo-doo, way up to here.
Oh, yeah.
Way up to here. That little clip from Jim Tur, by the way, Blue Canyon Productions.com, BlueCanyonSatire.com, Jim Tur's website. It's one of the great creative geniuses of our day in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Great guy there. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We've been talking about the various outrages of the day here. Now, the state election chief, this is from the New York Times. I just shared with you how a phony voter rights group put together by Republican operatives from the Bush-Cheney campaign got in to testify before Congress about how everything's going well in Ohio. So here's the story from the New York Times. The state election chief told lawmakers at a sometimes testy congressional hearing that Ohio's presidential election went as smoothly as possible. Said, and it goes on, the Secretary of State Kenneth Blackwell testified before members of the U.S. House Administration Committee, blah, blah, blah. His appearance came more than a month after he failed to appear before the committee at a hearing in Washington. Florida Secretary of State Glenda Hood, another Republican, also did not appear. It's pretty strange. Pretty strange. How do you say it? Pretty strange. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, our favorite registered nurse, Alice in Humboldt County on the line. Hey, Alice.
Yeah, good morning, Tom.
Good morning.
We have to come up with some kind of a think tank. We need to find ways to get our country back.
Yeah, well, we have one right here on this program, Alice, you and I.
Yeah.
Here we
yeah.
are. We're a think tank.
Anyway,
I agree with you. We need it by fraud. Well, that's frankly my opinion. There are some good groups, Alice, though, that if you have access to the Internet, you might want to check out AmericanProgress.org, the Center for American Progress, MediaMatters.org, David Brock's group. There are some folks doing some very good and very serious work now and refuting the relentless PR machine of the what David Brock refers to as the right-wing noise machine.
Well, we'll just have to work harder.
There you go. There you go.
Okay.
Alice, thanks for the call.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for sharing with us as often as you do. I do appreciate it. David in Tulsa, Oklahoma on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. You had spoken earlier about the economy and then that one guy that came on about mercury.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a lecture in college where he was talking about we're the test tube generation. That we have been born in an environment of chemicals that have never existed on this planet before.
Yep.
And you read articles about things like TFE, that's the Teflon, showing up in people's bloodstreams, and polyvinyl chloride showing up in people's bloodstreams. We always had this assumption that the government was looking out for us, that things were not getting put on the market, that we were being protected, when in fact it's caveat emptor, let the buyer beware.
Yeah.
That these things are not being checked. And the point is to accumulate it.
Well, there's the big difference here, David, is between the way the United States does it and the way that Europe and most of the rest of the world does it, is Europe and most of the rest of the world operates on what's called the precautionary principle, which says that if you're going to bring a new product to market, if you're going to put something into the environment, if people are going to be inhaling it, drinking it, breathing it, eating it, you have to first prove that it's safe.
Right.
Whereas in the United States, instead of using the precautionary principle, we have a rule that says if we discover after the fact that what, with the exception of course, with pharmaceuticals, but with foods, with genetically modified organisms, with we've had now 80,000 chemicals, new chemicals in our environment in the last 25 years. None of them have been, fewer than 600 are actually even regulated by the EPA. Our principle is once we figure out that what you are doing is harmful, then we'll make you stop.
Right, but what, even including drugs. I remember hearing a testimony by an assistant in the FDA, and he said the purpose of the FDA was not to stop the sale of snake oil, it was to stop the sale of snake venom. But, you know, this gets into economics, mm-hmm. and the whole idea, I call it gotcha capitalism. We can't make money honestly. We have to trick you. We have to try to find a way around the system to make a profit.
Yeah, and that's the tragedy of it is that's where I was going earlier with my screed about corporations. There's a lot of corporate behavior that I deplore. But if we the people collectively don't want that kind of corporate behavior to go on. For example, these you know massive accumulations of corporate power by virtue of monopoly, by virtue of mergers and acquisitions, which I believe violates both the spirit and the law of going all the way back to 1881 to the Sherman Antitrust Act. That if we don't want to allow this, we the people should get together and say, hey, enough, we're changing the rules of the game. And we have done that a lot of times, but lately, I mean, basically since Reagan came into power, the power has been tipped out of the hands of we the people and into the hands of a corporate elite that are not democratic and that aren't following democratic rules, and it's harming democracy. I mean, that's the absolute bottom line.
It's harming the democracy. It's harming the planet.
Yeah,
and you know here in Tulsa, our beloved senator. I apologize to the nation right now for Inhofe and Sullivan and you know
apology accepted, David. I
you know these guys. You see this corporate interest when they come up for election, and all this money just starts pouring in, and all these ads start pouring in. And I was involved with the Dodd campaign against Sullivan.
Yeah.
And it was so one-sided. At the very last minute, the Democratic Party kind of stepped in and tried to put some money.
But see, the bottom line here is, David, that it's not that those politicians are evil people or that those corporations are evil. It is that the system has been set up in such a way that people behave in what you could call an evil fashion. And we
right.
need to change that system. And there are people of good conscience in both parties who are trying to change that. I mean, look at how aggressively John McCain has worked on this issue for 15 years now.
And here
he's a guy who's a Republican. He's on so many issues I disagree with John McCain, and yet with campaign finance reform, it's one of the things he really and truly believes in, and he gets flack from the quote conservatives who say, well, government should not be interfering in business. Well, government creates business. If you want to create a corporation, you have to go to the Secretary of State's office and file articles of incorporation with the Secretary of State. The corporations are a creature of government, and they use the instruments of government to exist. They use the court system that we the people pay for. That's the only way that you can enforce contract law. They use currency that we the people maintain is stable through the Treasury Department. They're using the infrastructure. They're using an educated workforce that went in public schools that we paid for. Of course we should be able to set the rules of the
exactly.
game, but that's not the way they want
it. Well, it gets into the question of free market, and there's no such thing. All markets are controlled. It's just a matter of who or what is controlling them.
Yeah.
And in fact, you can say government is what creates markets by creating a, you know, supposedly to create a level playing field
once you establish a currency. David, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. I do appreciate it. Yes, government is established once you have currency. A barter system, you could say, a local barter system is a free market. You know, I'll come over and mow your lawn if you'll paint my house, you know, or whatever. Or I guess I'd have to mow your lawn for a year for you to paint my house. But, you know, that's a free market. But as soon as we've created a currency, a medium of exchange that we all agree on, now who's going to decide what the value of that medium of exchange is? Who's going to make sure that its integrity is maintained? Government. We the people. We have to collectively do that. Speaking of democracy in the boardroom, today Alan Murray, who very often has he writes a regular column for the Wall Street Journal, and he's also on TV. I think he's at CNBC, I'm not sure, or at least he used to be. Sometimes really, I mean, he's a conservative, but he puts these things out in ways that you just, I mean, this is the Wall Street Journal is like, you know, the rich talking to the rich, and there's a sense of, hey, we can just be honest here about this stuff. One of the reasons, you know, I find the editorial pages of the Wall Street Journal to be absolutely toxic. Toxic. But there's some great reporting in that newspaper, that and the New York Times. And again, I'm not paid by either one. I'll give you the Jeff Gannon disclaimer here. I'm paid by nobody. Our sponsors are the only ones who pay me. And you get to, you know, Small Dog Electronics, smalldog.com, and democraticmatch.com, ecowine.com. That's it. William Donaldson. Alan Murray writes, this Donaldson waivers as labor groups push for sway over boards. William Donaldson, and by the way, if you want me to be paid, patronize our sponsors. So, William Donaldson is having a hard time making up his mind. Now, you may not have heard of William Donaldson. I would guess probably if you were to go out and ask the average American, you go out on the street and say, do you know who William Donaldson is? Well, first of all, if you had asked 9 out of 10 Americans, you know, who Gerhard Schroeder is, they wouldn't know. Or Jacques Chirac, maybe you get a little higher, but you'd probably still only be hitting 5, 6 to 8%, something like that. Well, this guy's not a foreign head of state. He is the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission, the chairman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. And the commission, sort of like the FCC, it's a commission. It's a bunch of people. There's five of them. And you have two Democrats, two Republicans, and then you have the chairman. And the chairman gets appointed by the president, and so whoever the president is, whoever controls the White House, gets to determine who, essentially, which way the SEC is going to spin, which is why when Carter was in office, they were breaking up AT&T, they were enforcing the anti-monopoly laws, and when Reagan came into office, you saw the greatest wave of merger and acquisition mania and frenzy in the history of the United States that led to, you know, all these corporate scandals and the brought down the savings and loan and the $500 billion bailout of the SNLs. And, of course, one of George Bush's brothers, Neil Bush, with a Silverado savings and loan in Colorado, making out like a bandit, some would say literally. But in any case, we saw this sudden change in policy on the part of the SEC about whether, you know, how they're going to interpret and enforce the rules of corporate governance. And the reason why, of course, was because Reagan came into power and the Reagan-Bush administration, and some would say that George Herbert Walker Bush was as much in power as Ronald Reagan. Certainly in the last 2 to 3 years of Reagan's 8 years, he wasn't there. I mean, he just wasn't there. And George Bush was running the show, the George Bush the Elder. In any case, they get to appoint the head of the SEC. And George W. Bush has appointed William Donaldson. And there is this issue before the SEC, and has been for some time. And the issue is, should we have democracy in corporate boardrooms? Should we have rules that say that publicly traded corporations have to allow their larger stockholders, people who own stock over a certain threshold, should we have to allow them to have a say in how the company is run? See, there's this myth out there that is widespread and pervasive. Certainly, most conservatives promote it. Many of them believe it. Probably a lot of liberals, progressives believe it. That the corporate form is essentially a democratic form. That you've got the stockholders, and the stockholders vote in the board of directors, and the board of directors sets policy and hires the CEO and the senior executives, and then the senior executives run the company. And there is some truth to that, but the reality is that in a publicly traded corporation, And the greatest example of this, of course, is Disney over the last few years. Here you had Roy Disney, who owned a big chunk of stock. His brother was the guy who founded the corporation. And he tried for 10, 15 years to get Michael Eisner fired. And he stormed out, and he held protests, and he tried having stock. And he couldn't do it. There is not democracy in the boardroom. So as Alan Murray points out, accurately, and I think quite brilliantly in today's Wall Street Journal, he says, a year and a half ago, the Securities and Exchange Commission chairman proposed a rule allowing big shareholder groups under limited circumstances to nominate candidates for corporate boards of directors. It was a modest proposal, notes Alan Murray. And he goes on to point out, this was the same point in time when George W. Bush was running around, and this was a year and a half ago, same time when George W. Bush was running around trying to change the subject in Iraq from weapons of mass destruction to democracy. We're all in favor of democracy. We're making the world safe for democracy. Freedom's on the march. And so the SEC chairman says, okay, let's have democracy in our corporations here in America. Well, here's how Alan Murray said it, and I quote, at a time when President Bush was putting the military behind democracy in Iraq, the SEC chairman was backing a baby step toward democracy in the boardroom. However, he got his fingers burned. He suddenly discovered that the Republicans love to talk about democracy, but when it comes to actually practicing it, especially in the boardroom, forget it. Since then, however, Alan Murray notes, Mr. Donaldson has been in retreat. So now you've got two commissioners who are Democrats who are saying, hey, great idea. Let's have democracy in the boardroom. Let the stockholders' will actually be exercised. You got two Republicans saying, no, thank you. We want to have a corporate elite. The board of directors and the CEO, we want to have a corporate elite running the corporations, and then, of course, the corporations by proxy running the government by making campaign contributions and controlling the media. He says, under current rules, shareholder elections resemble those in the old Soviet Union. This is in today's Wall Street Journal by Alan Murray. If shareholders oppose a director nominated by the company, their only recourse is to withhold their votes or sell their stock. Withholding votes is pointless. A pointless protest because victory often requires a mere plurality. 10 minutes before the hour.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. With the continuing erosion of the middle class and the separation between the rich and poor increasing at an alarming rate as
bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
You see everything.
Welcome back. 5.5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Moving toward a bright and sparkling future by returning democracy to the United States of America. We're going to have to start in the boardroom. The SEC is struggling with this thing. Alan Murray writes this great column, the business column in today's Wall Street Journal. And he points out the business community has fought this bit of democracy with all its might. You know, I'm not making this up. I'm actually quoting this guy. He points out that the proposal, it's a fairly modest proposal. It suggests that if 5% of the stockholders of a publicly held corporation get together and they say, hey, you know, we think this person should be a candidate for the board of directors, that they get put on the ballot. And the business community in America is saying, no, as Alan Murray says, the business community has fought this bit of democracy with all its might. The reason is clear, if not always stated. In recent years, organized labor has mounted an aggressive, now we figure out what's going on, has mounted an aggressive and surprisingly successful campaign to take control of the big public employee pension funds.
We don't want those folks representing the rabble, representing labor, to be participating in corporate governance. Can't have that. They might say that we have to pay a living wage. They might have some crazy idea like close the factories in India and open them in Ohio. We can't have that.
See, now you're getting down to the down to where the rubber meets the road, as they say. Some labor leaders see these giant pools of money with an estimated $2 trillion in assets as their last best chance of wielding influence, notes Alan Murray. See, this is, you know, it is such a chance. He points out that last year, shareholders of Disney, 45% of them, did not vote for Michael Eisner. But it's the old Soviet system. It's not vote for Michael Eisner or vote for Joe Blow. It's vote for Michael Eisner, yes or no. It's the same kind of system Saddam had. This is how many of our corporations run their elections. He points out, asks AFSCME, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees, is one of the more active unions in getting involved in this sort of thing. And they filed lawsuits against Halliburton, American International Group, and Eastman Kodak, trying to make these corporations behave more democratically, trying to make them more responsive to their stockholders, who just happen to include organized labor. So it turns out that now you've got, you know, the Business Roundtable, which is the group of the CEOs of the 100 largest corporations in America. John Snow, our Treasury Secretary, used to be the president of it. Business Roundtable is absolutely opposed to this thing. They are saying, no way, we're not going to let this happen. And he notes the same battle is playing out in California, where Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger recently proposed changing the state's public, you know, basically Schwarzenegger is changing these things so that the pension fund is going to go away, that the union won't have access to it. Why? Because they might have some say in how corporations are run. Well, Schwarzenegger, being in with the cons, doesn't quite like them. Remarkable. Remarkable what you learn. Thanks for listening to the True People's Radio here, the Tom Hartman Program. See you tomorrow, same time, same place.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivil Nikraskin. I'm the president and founder of the Organic Wine Company.